morning, everyone. The third Thursday, that means a lot of things. Number one, it's Cook's Night Off at the Quincy Senior and Family Resource Center. So from 4 to 6 today, you can get a delicious fried chicken or roast beef dinner, eat in or carry out, for just $7, and that helps Meals Plus for seniors. There's a free movie today at the Quincy Senior Center, and it's 90 Minutes in Heaven. But probably what Third Thursday is known for all over the world is Master Gardener Day on the Mary Griffith Show with Kathy Carpenter. And so Kathy has joined us again. Her presence is much appreciated as we head into, we've had a few dog days of summer. We've had some really hot summer kind of weather, and then we've had spates of it being a little bit cooler. And I think this weekend we're going to get a little rain. So it's kind of silly here on, August 16th to be starting to think about what we're going to do in the fall. But just like we dream about our spring bloom catalogs in January, in August we have to start thinking about what we're going to do to get ready for the fall. So I'm just going to let you take it away. And we invite your phone calls, folks. Maybe you have questions. She's the lady. She's got a book here that has the answer to any question you could possibly ask.
Yeah, right.
And so all you have to do is call 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD, 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. Kathy Carpenter, what should we be doing?
Well, fall is one of the best times for doing a lot of things in the yard. To begin with, you have to start thinking about your lawn in the fall, because cool weather, people around here plant cool season grasses, which means the minute the temperatures begin to drop a little bit, they start perking up. And it's the ideal time to both reseed and to fertilize your lawn. I am not a great believer in fertilizing during the summer or even the late spring. Fall is ideal. It gives the plants that kind of nourishment that they need to produce a real healthy root system. And they need that going into the winter as well.
All the landscape experts say that. And it's kind of counterintuitive, because we want a lush green, carpet of lawn in the spring. But you really have to do that the fall before
exactly
for that to happen.
So,
yeah.
Exactly.
You've got to do it 6 months in advance of wanting it. Okay, good.
And, your grass is coming off of a really stressful summer. It's been hot. It's been dry. And they don't like heat, and if you want green, and most people do, even in the summer, you have to water. Hard on your water bill. But if people have done that, then the grass has been growing when it's not really supposed to be growing, and so it's been stressed additionally. That's why that fertilizer in the fall is so important.
Okay, now what do you suggest for lawn fertilization? There are many companies that you can hire to do it for you, but let's say somebody wanted to reseed and fertilize their lawn. So let's start first with the fertilizer portion. We go to the store, the garden supply center, and we get a lawn fertilizer. What should it contain?
Well, all fertilizers contain the three, essential nutrients that a lawn needs. But for a lawn, because it's grass and it's got leaves, they need a higher nitrogen. That's the first number that you see on the, you'll see three numbers, and the first number has got nitrogen. And that's the most important thing for a lawn. The other numbers are less important for grasses, but you should still have a bit of a balance in there, the potassium and the phosphorus. But I would say probably the nitrogen and possibly P is phosphorus, K is phosphorus is probably a little less, because I think that's mostly for flowering,
okay,
and such.
So if you want grass, you have to treat it like grass, which is a bladed flowering, not flowering, but it's a leafy. It leaves. It has leaves. Those are leaves, even though we think of it as grass. It's a leaf. So get good nitrogen. Now, anything you buy commercially, if you look at the label and it says it's for your lawn and nitrogen is the highest concentration, you're pretty safe.
You are.
Don't have to be
you don't need a rocket scientist for that. No, but when you spread it, you know, you really should have like a spreader and follow the directions in terms of setting the spreading amount, because people can overdo anything and it will burn the grass.
You will get a nitrogen burn. And that's why also if you have pets that use a particular area of your lawn over and over again,
yes,
that is a nitrogen burn because they have nitrogen in their urine products. So fertilize with a good nitrogen first fertilizer, but if it has potassium and phosphorus or any other thing in it, that's good too. Just make sure it's got nitrogen. That's what grass needs.
And overseeding is something people like to do in the fall because they want that thick grass. They don't want little patchy grasses. And if you have a full sun situation, that's ideal for a grass. You know, if you got lots of big shade trees, they're lovely too, but you're going to have less the grass doesn't like shade too much. There are some mixes of grass that say that they do better in shade, and they do to some extent. But even so, grass likes sun.
So if you're going to buy grass seed, make sure that if you're having a problem with a shaded area, that you specifically get a grass seed that is supposed to do better in shade. But just like anything else, it needs sun. So if it never gets any sun, it's probably not going to do much good. But you can just reseed in a bare spot or just right over the top of your already growing grass because you're just making it more lush. You're encouraging it. Now, timing of this, of fertilization and of seeding, is critical because the birds will come down and eat all that grass seed if you let them. So it's better to do it, if you can, right before rain. So get everything ready. Sit there with your Mackinaw on and your rubber boots. And the minute it starts to rain, run out there and do all this real quick.
Well, that's a little extreme, actually.
Okay.
But yes, I love if you're gonna do a bare patch, you know, you have a bare patch and you want to reseed it completely. You know, you got to work up the soil a little bit. Put a little fresh topsoil on top, seed it, and of course those are the one that's the type that the birds, you know, they spot the seed and they will go right down. So then you might, if you have a little straw or something that you can sprinkle over that soil, that would be good because the birds will have a much harder time getting it.
The birds seem to be smart enough to know, oh, look at the lady putting out straw. I bet there's bird seed under there. But maybe you can fool them. But again, you have to work the soil a little bit on a bare spot.
Oh, yes.
You can't just put it on top and expect it to grow. It's just like, you don't want to plant it, I mean, 5 inches deep, obviously, but you got to have some texture there and some working up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Texture what you've got, which is probably not very good, and then put some
little
fresh soil on top,
yeah,
you know, to kind of give the
exactly
the seed that good start it gets before it gets down and then really starts to take
because
root.
Actually, you know, grass seed essentially germinates on top of the ground,
mm-hmm,
and it sends its roots down in. And of course, if the ground is a rock hard, you know, the old story from the Bible, you know, the seed falling on rock and it doesn't do too well.
So if you don't believe Kathy Carpenter, open up your Bible, folks. Work that ground around a little bit. So, but basically the same thing. You can either broadcast it by hand or you can, using the same kind of device that people have to fertilize, put your seed in there, and that will evenly distribute it over your lawn, and you can give a little special attention. Just like you can over-fertilize, is there such a thing as overseeding?
Well, it's just a little wasteful for
okay.
you, really. I mean, the seeds will germinate, but if you put too much on, chances are that it's overkill. You know, you're spending more money on the seed than you have to.
Because only so much is going to survive. It's kind of like planting your garden. You know, you say, well, gee whiz, I want 40 pounds of carrots. So I'm just going to plant it. You know, I mean, that's not going to work because only a certain percentage of them are going to grow to fruition. The rest are going to be crowded out by the naturally healthy one. But you can have a very healthy lawn if you fertilize and seed in the fall, and that's critical. Now, by the fall, you mean what time frame?
generally September is the good time because you have to, you want the plants, the little grass plants, to establish themselves before things start freezing. And that'll give it plenty of time. Don't forget the watering, too, because we can be wet in the fall. We can be dry in the fall. So keep an eye on things, and especially when they're in the seed stage and getting the early germination, they need regular, not necessarily totally deep watering, but they need enough regular water so that they can get their roots established.
So, again, if you knew that a small, gentle rain was going to fall, it'd be perfect to do it right before then.
Yeah, exactly.
A torrential downpour could just wash it away, so you don't want that.
If you're on a slope, yeah.
And you want to be careful, too, speaking of slopes. You know, when you put down nitrogen and stuff like that, although there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the chemical nitrogen, but it will run off into a creek or into a waterway behind your home.
Exactly, and eventually it will end up in the Mississippi River, and it will go downstream, and it will contribute to the dead zone in the Gulf. So that's why you don't want to do, you want to follow those directions. You want to spread just the right amount that you can and try to avoid, you know, too much runoff.
And don't do it now. Wait till September when it starts to cool off a little bit, but you definitely want to have the fertilizer absorbed and the seed sprouted. Not that you'll be able to see it unless you get down there with a magnifying glass, but you want it to take root before winter's frost, and then it will have established itself, and in the spring it will be rejuvenated and born.
Absolutely.
And if you wait until the spring to seed and fertilize,
yeah,
it's a little bit too late.
Can
you can
do it, but you know, the problem is we don't know how hot it's going to get fast. And the problem is new grass, especially cool season grass, doesn't really do well when it gets hot. It wants to go dormant immediately, and it might not have the root system established that will get it through that hot weather.
So if we get a really hot Indian summer, your grass gets confused and says, oh, it's so nice and cool. I'm going to put down these great roots, and I'm going to start to grow, and life's great. And then all of a sudden we get a weird, freakish 90-degree day, and it says, I'm done. Thank you. So anyway, and of course, call a professional if you, you know, if you really can't figure it out yourself.
Yeah, and you don't want to deal with it. You know, there are people for a price who will take care of it all for you.
Well, I would tell you that, I mean, I'll give a plug to him, Kramer Land Care. I mean, he took a yard that was about as disgusting and untended as could be when I moved into my one domicile, and within 3 years, which sounds like a long time, but I mean, you got to see where you started from. It was so lush. You just walk around barefoot. You just love. And the same thing, you know, I convinced my husband that we really needed some professional help. And boy, we have a very, very nice, lush yard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean we don't do a little bit ourselves, but sometimes you need a professional to give you a jump start. Right. And so, hey, we've got a phone call.
Oh, cool.
So this is great. We're going to get right to our phone calls because they're the most important part of the Mary Griffith Show. Thank you for calling. You're on the air with our master gardener, Kathy Carpenter.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Ms. Carpenter, when I was a boy, my aunt, she made her own pesticide. Now, it consisted of soapy water and tobacco juice. And she would mix this up and she'll put it on her roses in her garden. How do you feel about homemade pesticides?
Well, it's an awful lot of work, for one thing. The active ingredient in her homemade brew was the nicotine. That is a pesticide that is used in many commercial pesticides on the market. It's poison. That's why smoking isn't good for you, you know? But it is effective, and the reason she used the soapy water was it acts as what they call a surfactant. It enabled that nicotine to stick to the leaves.
Right.
But personally, you can't control the dosage that way. I mean, she had her home brew, but I bet you if you scientifically had tested it, each batch she made was probably a little bit different in terms of the amount of
stuff. Is there any danger that kitty cat or doggy could lick that or get that and have harmful effects, or is it, you know, that'd be such a small...
It would probably, you know, it'd have to be a fair amount, and there'd have to be a lot of eating going on,
okay.
I would suspect.
So
but still,
it's fairly safe.
Fairly safe, but again, you can't control the dosage, and, you know,
and
it's a poison. It's a poison for people, too.
And you need to have a spit jar, which I don't want to think about, you know,
please.
The tobacco juice. Okay, we've got another caller who's on the line waiting patiently. Kathy Carpenter is our master gardener. Good morning, caller. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a Rosa Sharon bush, mm-hmm. and it is loaded with these little green seed pods. Would it hurt if I cut those off?
You probably would be, it would be good for you to do that, unless you want lots of little baby Rose of Sharon bushes in your garden, because they do grow from seed.
That's what I'm trying to avoid, and I didn't know if it would hurt the plant, but
No.
It is weighing the branches down so heavily, they're bending over, so I wanted to get rid of them.
Yeah, you can easily do that, no problem.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you. So nip that Rose of Sharon literally in
the
bud. We're going to take a break, but first I have to share a great story with you, Kathy Carpenter. You know, I know absolutely nothing except everything you've taught me, you know, being a master gardener. And we were out in Portland, Maine at Cape Elizabeth, and there were some plants growing in the park there. And several people were saying, is that rose hips? Is that rose hips? Is that rose hips? And I looked, I said, I think it is. And the other lady said, well, I think it is too. Then somebody else came over and said, I'm not sure if it is. So here we are, you know, we're talking, all this big group from the Quincy area on this bus trip out to Maine, and we're all talking about these rose hips. And finally, some poor guy trying to enjoy this serenity and peaceful view of Cape Elizabeth Lighthouse said, turned around and goes, they're rose hips. He didn't say shut up, but it wasn't implied. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. But please call right now, and we can get you right in. 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. Well, I don't know what to say, We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We've had two great calls. Somebody wanting to know about homemade pesticides with tobacco spit, tobacco juice, and soap. Yes, it works, but I don't want to collect the tobacco juice. And Rose of Sharon. Yes, you should take the little seed pods off your Rose of Sharon unless you want a lot more Rose of Sharon, because sometimes, again, those things can overgrow.
Mm-hmm.
So Kathy Carpenter has given expert advice already, and now she's ready for more phone calls at 223-9300, 1-800-228-WTAD. That's 1-800-228-9823. There's no question that's too difficult. She may not know the answer, but she's got her big book of everything she needs to know about horticulture right in front of her, so I think she'll be able to do a pretty good job. We're looking ahead. We talked about lawn fertilization. What about fertilization of perennials? Now, these are going to come back next year. How do you know when the season's over, and when should you fertilize those? Should you do that? I know bulbs, I think, need to be fertilized in the fall,
well,
right?
Well, the bulbs, yeah, bulbs can be fertilized, should be fertilized when they're still growing, you know. Or if you are planting bulbs, which is something that people do a lot in the fall, at the spring blooming bulbs all have to be planted in the fall. And they should be planted. They can be planted up until the time the ground freezes. And normally you fertilize the bulb when you plant it. And that way, because there's a lot of work that goes on under that ground before any green shoot ever comes up. You know.
So if you have any kind of bulb, fertilizing in the fall is preferred. And again, the time frame for that would be September-ish.
Yeah. But it can be, like, bulbs can go in as long as the ground isn't frozen. So even if you happen to find
October-ish.
Some bulbs you forgot to plant, you can generally plant them if the ground is not frozen.
Well, we called for phone calls, and we've got them. So slip back on your headphones. Somebody's waited patiently.
Oh,
I hope they've waited patiently.
My headphone just
snap it back in there. It's one of the... Oh, you're so strong. By the way, I'm charging you for breaking my headphone. Not that I don't break it four times a day, but you don't have to know that. Good morning. Thanks for your patience. You're on the air with Kathy Carpenter, our master gardener. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I have a mandevilla, the broad, waxy-leaved one that has the big pink flowers on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the other day, I discovered a couple of ants crawling on the leaves, and it's not been blooming well at all this year.
Mm-hmm.
Today I went out there, and on the vines in different places, there are little yellow things that look maybe like eggs or something. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh gosh. So I went and got my magnifying glass, and I thought it was, I thought something was moving in them. And they are. They're little yellow, like eggs, and they're feelers sticking out of them. Do I have a maternity ward here for ants or what?
Well, ants don't usually lay eggs on plants at all. They are ubiquitous, as you will probably discover anytime you get around any soil at all. You look long enough, there's going to be ants.
Mm-hmm.
They don't generally hurt plants.
Oh, okay.
They go on the plants primarily because the plant maybe has some nectar that they're interested in,
mm-hmm.
or that there may be aphids on your plant,
mm.
which produce a sweet liquid in their own bodies, and the ants come to get that.
Ah.
Uh-huh. So I wouldn't really worry about ants per se on your plant.
But what is that?
The little yellow things that could be. Most aphids are green, but they could very well be, an aphid. The aphids that are being attracted. I mean, the ants are being attracted to. I would try first. I mean, I don't know that if they're truly aphids, you should be able to turn a hose on them with a power spray kind of thing, you know, and rinse them off.
Okay.
And so you can try that and see if that'll be sufficient. I hate to start indiscriminately spraying. Is your mandevilla in the ground or is
it's in a pot?
It's in a pot. Okay. Are you planning on keeping it over the winter or anything like that?
No,
or you...
I tried that once and it didn't work.
Didn't work, yeah. That usually doesn't. So
yeah.
I was just wondering. But
no,
yeah.
It's in a pot and it's climbing up a porch rail, you know.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm not sure in terms of it's not blooming as well for you. I would guess that what you're seeing didn't have any effect on that.
On the blooming.
Sometimes mandevilla, I've had mandevilla that do beautifully for
mm-hmm.
me, and then I've had some like you're experiencing
mm-hmm.
now, and
yeah.
I don't think you can look at the plant in the nursery and
figure
out whether it's going to be good or not good.
Right.
Can't you
right.
Just
I've had them for years, and you're right. There are some years when they're not been very plentiful with blooms, you know.
Kathy, should she just pick those little critters off and just dispose of them somehow? Or?
Well,
I
don't want to listen. I'm sick to my stomach from you describing them. I mean, you got a magnifying glass and it looked back at you. I'd be screaming.
No, I didn't have eyes. It just had legs.
Oh, my goodness. Well, of course, I clean my orchids. When I have scale problems on my orchids, I have a isopropyl alcohol and dip a paper towel in that and wipe the leaves off and get rid of them that way.
Yeah.
But that sounds like a lot of work, especially
yeah.
you've got a whole lot of them there. Try the water spray
yeah.
treatment
okay.
first.
Okay, try that first and then go get Little Shop of Horrors and hope that it's not something like Audrey that will come back and
eat you,
and, you know, eat you eventually. So we hope that everything works out okay. Thank you for your phone call. It was nice having her as a listener. Those plants, those little animals are now saying, she's talking about us. Let's go get her. We have another caller that's waited patiently. Hopefully it's not something that's going to turn my stomach again. Good morning. What is your problem that Kathy Carpenter can solve? Hi.
What?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Are you the master gardener?
Yes, Kathy Carpenter is here, the master gardener. What's your question?
The question is, I'm trying to keep my Christmas flower. What's it called? You know, it comes up and blooms.
Poinsettia.
Starts with a C.
A C.
A Christmas cactus.
Christmas cactus, maybe.
Just a minute. Hold on. Okay, I know you're busy. It's a... nothing is simple. Amaryllis.
Amaryllis, okay.
Amaryllis,
yes.
Uh-huh, and I wanted to save it. So I lost my instructions, and I let it bloom, and then I cut it off, and I didn't water it. I let it go. Well, then I found my instructions, and it said I should keep watering it until summer. And so I started watering it again. But the leaves were still green, and I did cut them back so I can store the bulbs in the refrigerator. Will it do any good?
Number one, you don't store amaryllis bulbs in the refrigerator at all. What you generally have to do with amaryllis is after it blooms, you just continue to water it. You can even fertilize it a little bit until basically the end of summer. Now, some amaryllis will naturally die back themselves. I mean, the leaves will get brown and will drop off. Others are essentially evergreen. So you have to force them into dormancy by withholding water. But you don't generally do that until, like, I've started now in August on my two. And the leaves are still green, but eventually they'll get the idea. And then you leave it be dormant. And they could be kept dormant at just your regular room temperature.
Doesn't have to be dark, though.
No, okay. Not like poinsettias. They just have to be they just have to go dormant, and so you want the leaves to brown out and essentially wilt and fall off, and then you let it rest for 2 months or so, then you can start watering it again, and it should put out green leaves for you. But it's a tropical bulb; you really don't want to put it in the refrigerator. It isn't meant
okay.
for that.
I took the bulbs out.
Mm-hmm.
And should I cut off the roots or leave them on?
Oh, no. Don't even take them out of the pot. Just leave them in the pot. They're happy that way.
I already took them out.
Oh, well. Put them back in the pot.
Okay.
You don't have to water them, though, until, you know, about... Oh, say the end of October, beginning of November.
You've got to force them to bloom, so you're going to have to get them to go dormant first.
Yes.
And then you reintroduce nutrition so that they'll
and water.
Come alive
yeah.
again.
Exactly.
And then that's why they bloom around Christmas time.
Right. And if you're a little late on that, then they'll bloom around February or whatever. But
that's
will
okay,
lose.
Just so I can keep it going. But it wouldn't hurt it that I let it go dormant there for a while.
It has to rest. That's important. It has to rest.
It has to go dormant. It has to go dormant. So you haven't done anything irreversible yet. Just put it back
in. Even though I cut it off.
Well, you know, if you cut the flower stalk off after it blooms.
No, this is just the green stems.
Well, you see, it's the green that feeds the bulb. So, I mean, you're kind of on a, you know, shaky path here.
But replant
but give
it
a try.
Fertilizer.
Give it a try. Yeah, but don't start it watering it and such until at least towards the end of October.
Right.
See what happens. See what happens.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank yeah. you. Yes, I hope your amaryllis comes back. And they say in the Wells Fargo wagon, it's a coming.
Yeah.
We've got another caller.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Every year, I have the hardy hibiscus, and every year the leaves just get shredded by something.
Japanese beetles.
Japanese beetle?
Oh, yeah, they love hibiscus. They love it.
Well, I haven't seen any of them, but
well,
my
they're
hibiscus
sneaky.
Are... not looking very good.
Around
they look
this,
like lace.
Yeah, around this time of year, too, the grasshoppers come out, and they can be, they can eat them, too. But normally speaking, the biggest damager of the hibiscus is the Japanese beetle or its, you know, semi-relatives that we have here.
Is there anything I can do?
Not.
What,
really?
What eats the Japanese beetle? Can she put that on it?
Nothing eats the Japanese beetle. Well, maybe an occasional praying mantis might, but for the most part, Japanese beetles, they're not native to here. They have no real natural enemies. If you see them, yes, you can apply a pesticide directly to the beetle. The point is that it doesn't do any good. They don't ingest. Ingesting it doesn't really kill them. The pesticide has to contact the beetle to make it die. Mm-hmm.
Well, and, if I see a Japanese beetle, I always just pick it off and kill it.
Exactly.
But I've never seen one on my hibiscus.
Right. Well, all I can say is in my garden, the main culprit that produces leaves like you're describing is generally the Japanese beetle. But
okay.
It could be. I'm not saying there aren't other things that eat leaves.
Well, I just want to tell you, we didn't see the Japanese coming at Pearl Harbor, too, so they are sneaky, so you better be careful. That Japanese beetle could be sneaking up from anywhere. The phone lines are lit. We're going to try to get to all these phone calls. Thank you for calling. Next caller, good morning. You're on the air. What's on your mind for Kathy Carpenter, our master gardener?
Hello?
Hello, that's you. What's on your mind?
Well, I bought these hydrangea plants this spring, and they were beautiful. And all of a sudden, the blooms just turned brown, and that's all I got is just those ugly-looking blooms on them.
Well, that's kind of natural for hydrangea. The flowers last for a certain period, but they don't last forever, and they do naturally, turn brown. I don't know exactly what variety of hydrangea you have, but it's normal. What I would do if they turn brown like that, you don't like the look, cut it off, cut the bloom off.
Okay.
But that's normal for a plant. You know.
Well, I didn't know.
Sure, okay. No problem.
Well, that's
okay.
All right.
Thank you
now
very
you
much.
Do. Thank you. Right. Don't call your hydrangea young ugly. Its mother loves it. Good morning. You're going to be our last caller. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was wondering, does the Japanese beetles get on the Japanese red maple trees? We have the leaves on our Japanese maple. We was wondering what's eating on it. We don't see nothing.
Yeah, I have not seen them on the maples at all. I know they love linden trees. They will eat those. They can defoliate a linden tree, but I have not seen that. I'm not going to say they're pretty omnivorous, those Japanese beetles, so I'm not going to say never, but I haven't really experienced them as a particular pest of even the Japanese maples.
What could we do to get rid of the beetles?
Well, as I said, number one, pick them off and you know, take a little jar with some soapy water, pick them off, throw them in the jar, and you know, throw the jar away.
Okay.
But
thank you.
Or you can pay a kid to pick them off for you.
Okay. What could be possibly eating her Japanese maple besides the Japanese beetle, though? If her leaves are getting eaten, what could that be, Kathy? I think we've stumped Kathy. This
I think
is going
to
be great.
That I may have to do some research.
Okay,
on,
I tell you
know?
What. The third Thursday of next month, ma'am,
right.
If your Japanese maple hasn't been decimated by then because Kathy can't come up with the answer, blame her.
Hey.
She will have the answer. She's writing it now in her big book of things I must tell Mary on the third Thursday of the month. We will find out what could possibly be damaging
munching the maple.
Leaf of the Japanese maple. Again, I was going to say something, but I better not. Thank you, Kathy Carpenter. It's delightful. The third Thursday of every month, and we had so many phone callers, and I want to thank you because that's what makes the show great is your phone call. So tell all your friends who like to garden that the third Thursday of the month, we're always going to have our master gardeners on. Thank you so much.
Sure.